Coming up on Tech News Today, tomorrow is Apple's big day in the sun. Also, Amazon's Fire TV update will soon include Echo capability, also 4K capability. Google is appealing the $2.7 billion antitrust fine it received in the EU. PewDiePie puts Let's Play on the line by opening his mouth. And a look at the mental health of gaming industry workers. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1850, recorded Monday, September 11th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about some of the biggest tech news stories with people who are passionate about technology. I'm Jason Howell. Megan Maroney is out today. She's got an event that she's attending tonight. She'll be back tomorrow. But joining me in her place is the triumphant return of Russ Pitts. How's it going, Russ?
Hello. It's going very well, Jason. Thank you. I'm a person who's passionate about technology. You're saying that. I was like, oh, wait, that's me.
I know. Sometimes we say that at the top, and then I'm like, wait a minute. Is the person that's on just talking about technology because it's their job, or are they actually passionate about it? So you run a little bit of a risk, I suppose, but I'm happy that you have the passion.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
So it's good to have you back. You've been busy. Obviously, we've had you on a number of times. You've talked a little bit about Flying Saucer Media. You can go to flyingsaucermedia.com to find out some of the projects that you've been working on there. But you just got back from PAX West. Tell us a little bit about why you were there.
Yeah. So I was at PAX West in Seattle last week because we were premiering the actual physical premiere of the film I've been working on for the last 21 months. It's called We Are Desert Bus. It's a documentary about Desert Bus for Hope fundraiser that's been going on for the past 10 years. Not straight for the last 10 years, but they run the fundraiser for about a week every November, and they've been doing it for the last 10 years. Last year, we were in Canada with them. We filmed off and on for most of 2016, but we were in Canada for most of the month of November filming with them as they did their 10th anniversary fundraiser. So far to date, they have raised something on the order of $3.8 million for Child's Play Charity.
That is so cool. That is awesome.
Yeah, huge event, and it was a ton of fun.
Right on. And that's got to be such a big feeling of accomplishment. I mean, emotion, like, finishing a motion picture, like a film, a full-length film, finishing a novel, these are things that I have to imagine. Like, I've never done either of those things yet. I have to imagine, because they take so much coordination, so much time and effort, you get to the end of the line, and you're just like, feels totally satisfied after all that amount of work.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've written books, I've made films. This is my first feature-length documentary film. So, you know, 21 months is a long time for anything.
That is.
Being done with it, I'm mainly just relieved, right? Because I have that brain space back now.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those people, I'm always thinking about what's next. Like, I was finishing the film and I was working with my crew to finish up post-production. I was already thinking about what was next. And I was talking to my wife about it, and she's like, you know what? How about you just take a few months off? I'm like, oh yeah, okay. Maybe I'll try to savor this being done with something for a while and see what comes of that.
Yeah, but when you're used to moving and working on something and everything like that, it's really not that easy to take time off. It's like all these people that are like, I want to make so much money that I don't have to work anymore, and then they don't have to work anymore. They accomplish that, and they're like 5 months in, and they're bored out of their minds, and so they work because it's better than not working.
Yeah,
it's like you don't know what to do with yourself.
Yeah, or you go bananas, you know, like those guys who live in multi-billion-dollar mansions and just tweet all day, tweet angry stuff all day.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's awesome. We're going to talk more about kind of some of the other stuff that you've been working on a little bit later on this show. Before we get there, we got a lot of news to cover, so let's get started. Tomorrow is the big day, the moment Apple fans the world over have been waiting for, with an event to see the launch of the 10th anniversary iPhone, or the lineup of iPhones. The first first event to take place at Apple's mega spaceship campus in Cupertino, in the Steve Jobs Theater. And seeing as how there is no such thing as a good surprise in the digital age anymore, and thanks to the leak of iOS 11 firmware, here's what we expect to see at this point. Before we dive into this, are you an iPhone owner? Are you an iPhone owner?
Absolutely. And I had, until this year, I was on an every 2 years plan, and I just switched to an every year plan. So something, they'll be announcing something tomorrow that I will have in my pocket by the end of the year, I'm sure.
You're going to be following this with much interest. We've got the iPhone 8 and the 8 Plus models. Those both will have the LCD display, glass backs, wireless charging, quick charge via the USB 3 lightning plugs. Basically, for the most part, it kind of like a an upgrade to the existing iPhone model, but with some extra features, obviously, because this is the next major upgrade. But the one that everybody is waiting for, of course, because it's the most expensive and the biggest change, is the more than $1,000 rumored at this point iPhone X or iPhone 10, depending on whether you follow Apple lore and the fact that they like to turn X's into 10s. It doesn't follow numerically in the terms of iPhone models, but what do you think? Because at this point, it seems like we know that it's going to be iPhone with a letter X, but is it X or 10?
I think I would have to go with 10 on that. And it's funny because there's actually a film there's a scene in the film I just shot where they were doing Desert Bus 10, but they decided to call it Desert Bus X on paper, but pronounced 10. It's a funny little scene, and that's happening, and it's really art imitates life, or life imitates art. Yeah. I'm gonna call it iPhone 10, even though there hasn't been a 9, and they're releasing an 8 just now. It's kind of weird, but then they skipped 2, so I guess I don't know.
Yeah,
it should actually be 7.
There's precedent for jumping numbers, not just in Apple either. I think Samsung did the same thing. They all jump. It's just branding and marketing more than anything. This device is going to be very different, supposedly. Edge-to-edge OLED display, kind of a cutout on the front-facing camera around the display, or the display is going to cut out around the camera up at the top. No home button, no Touch ID. Instead, it's going to have facial recognition that we talked about on the show before, wireless charging, a vertical dual camera array on the back. And this one, from all accounts, is going to be delayed, the release on this, which this is definitely the premium device that Apple is likely to announce tomorrow. And I'm guessing the device that Russ Pitts will be ordering and waiting a long time for.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I've got my 7 Plus right now, and it's a fine device. It's a perfect iteration of the iPhone. So I'd be happy. I got the red one, too, so I'm happy to hang on to that for a little while until that 10 comes out with the edge screen and the I'm not sure about the no home button, but I can do without the Touch ID, because that just, you know, you get used to the Touch ID. You know, if your hand's a little bit wet or you have a little bit of lotion on them, you know, you have to press it like 9 times. Yeah. And then just when you get used to that, it goes instantly, right? As soon as you pick up the phone, and it just messes up my whole flow. So that is one Apple innovation that I have not learned to love yet. So I'd be happy to get rid of that.
Well, yeah, supposedly. And now with this phone that'll be announced tomorrow, it could be sitting on the desk, and the whatever sensor it's using to detect facial recognition will, even from an angle, be able to recognize that you are there and keep your phone unlocked for you, or unlock it when you pick it up. Suppose I'm hoping, and Apple, you know, wouldn't push out a feature like this, I don't think, unless it was working at, you know, at least close to 100% accurate, especially if they're replacing something like Touch ID, which is very known at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. And what will be interesting is if I do the facial recognition thing and then I shave my beard, right? or maybe I'm wearing a hat, right? Yeah. How good is it? Is it like dog level of facial recognition where it has to get really close before it recognizes? I don't know.
Better be a little bit better than that. If this is Apple and this is like the main amount of security, like the primary security on the device, better be just a hair better than that. No pun intended. Apple Watch Series 3, they're expecting a faster processor inside, LTE radio, so you can finally leave the house without your phone and still have your watch updating and streaming music and all this stuff. Are you an Apple Watch wearer?
I am not. I really enjoy my old school analog watches.
Fair enough.
My wife has the Apple Watch. She loves it. She loves the vibrate to the vibrate alarm feature. She uses that to wake up every morning. It's a nice, gentle way to wake up. Yeah. She uses it for fitness tracking. I would be concerned with the LTE radio about battery life, because the battery life on those guys isn't really that great to begin with.
Well, it's a tiny device, can't pack a whole lot of battery in there, so there's going to be a lot of software software improvements to maximize the amount of battery. And then an LTE radio in there, it kills it a lot faster. So we'll see how much Apple can tweak it to make it extend a little bit more. But maybe that's just kind of the trade-off. You know, if you're getting that extra freedom, you have to be able to accept the fact that it's not going to last as long as something else. Does it get you through to the end of the day?
Yeah.
I think that's the big question.
Maybe it comes with a matching accessory that's like a battery wristband that you can put on your other wrist. And you just touch them together every once in a while, like Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I like it. Or, a wireless battery charger that you just snap onto the watch face when you're out and about. You're like, I need a top up. And you just, and it covers the battery. It wirelessly charges for an hour. Your wrist is maybe 5 pounds heavier.
But then that's a workout. You're then just like holding a weight. Yeah.
Yes. See, we should totally work for Apple. Apple TV Generation 5 with 4K Ultra HD support. Also, apparently, according to this iOS 11 firmware leak that leaked a bunch of details ahead of time, someone I'm sure got fired for that. haptic feedback in the remote, if that's your thing. Get a little kick when you hit the menu button or something. I'm not really quite sure why. People have 4K TVs. They need content. Yeah. They need a set-top box that's going to support that. And so I suppose that makes a whole lot of sense. I don't have
that new things. Gen 4. I do. It's hilarious. We actually have Apple all over the house. And I was troubleshooting the takethis.org website earlier today, and some of my folks who were using Windows machines were seeing an error. And I said, well, I can't actually troubleshoot this error because I have no Windows devices in my house. But we have the Apple TVs, and they're kind of wonderful.
Yeah.
But that Generation 4 remote really could use the haptics, because they redesigned the remote. And it's a little less intuitive, and it's really the touchpad is super sensitive. So getting some little vibrating feedback on that touchpad on that remote would be a pretty good thing.
All right. Also, possibly see an update to the AirPods, the little dangly white things that hang out of people's ears now that we've just kind of gotten used to. I haven't gotten used to it. Also, updates to iOS 11, macOS High Sierra, watchOS 4, tvOS 11. All the release dates for those are probably going to be detailed. Obviously, we have yet to get any of these formal announcements. We're going to find out first thing tomorrow morning. Based on what you've heard in the leaks, are you excited as an Apple fan? Are you excited about what you're hearing?
I am. You know, and I generally get more excited about refinements. I used to be on the S train. You know, I would buy the iPhones when they came out with the S model, because I get more excited about the tuning and the refinements to the existing stuff than I do about the, you know, big brand new devices. We have two Apple TVs in the house. One of them is a Gen 3, so we'll probably get the Gen 5 to replace that and switch them around. I'm excited about the AirPods. I haven't tried them yet. I've been sort of waiting to try them, but if they're coming out with a Gen 2, that's kind of cool. It's not like – it seems weird that this is the biggest leak, right? Because it doesn't seem like a lot of really big, bold new stuff. Like, they're not introducing the AirPods. They're not introducing the watch. It seems like just sort of run-of-the-mill, you know, off-year updates. So, like, I don't know. It's kind of cool to know what's going to happen ahead of time. But, if I was going to risk my job or my career to leak a bunch of stuff, maybe I would have waited until I had something good, you know?
Yeah.
It's
kind of depressing at this point how used to these pre-announcement leaks we've gotten, because it used to be that an announcement would happen and you'd be surprised. And it's very possible that Apple will have some surprises still to offer, and that even possible that even some of this information is inaccurate in reality, you know, doesn't end up coming to fruition. But still, you get to the announcement, it's almost 9 times out of 10 you're let down a little bit because you weren't surprised at all, because we know too much. We're just too in the know at this point.
We've been poking around in closets, you know, in the weeks leading up to Christmas, and we found everything already. But we're just hoping something new is going to show up under the tree.
Burke is wondering about the Mac Pro, and I don't think we're seeing anything about the Mac Pro. Maybe they'll show something off because they did say that by the end of the year. There we go.
There you go. Yeah.
They did say a while ago that by the end of the year they would have some sort of a Mac Pro announcement or update. But so maybe we'll find out more about that. I haven't seen any leaks though that point to here it is. Get your wallets ready. Let's get these out to you. But regardless, live coverage here on the Twit Network. If you want to watch the live announcement, you can, along with commentary by Leo, Megan Maroney, and Alex Lindsay. They're going to be here at 9:45 a.m. Pacific tomorrow morning, 12:45 p.m. Eastern. Just go to twit.tv/live, and you can watch that recorded live, streamed live, and find out, along with everyone else in the chat room, just what Apple has in store.
I tell you, if they announce a Mac Pro tomorrow, they're getting my whole paycheck.
Dang, I know, right? You're like, already listed off like three things that you can't wait to get.
I've been waiting on that Mac Pro. Yeah. I've been using an iMac, pretty decent iMac for my film editing. But man, I could really use a better machine.
I have a 2007 or 2008 Mac Pro. That's still like, I've maxed it out with memory. Like it's still doing everything that I need it to do, but I'm starting to see kind of like the cracks in the whole, you know, update experience and everything. So I'm pulling for a Mac Pro as well, because I will probably get one.
Fingers crossed. Come on, Santa.
Daddy needs a new computer. Amazon has higher resolution video in its sites as well, and it looks like an upcoming refresh of the Amazon Fire TV lineup will bring 4K HDR 60 frames per second video to the device. The cubicle set-top box, it's like a big boxy cube thing, will not only handle the increased image quality, it also has far-field microphones and a speaker on board to make it yet another Alexa-capable device with no need for an extra voice-enabled remote. And it will work like a standalone Echo at all times. So even if you're not using it in the Fire TV capability, it's still another Echo device in your room that can, you know, talk with other Echo devices that you can throw voice commands to and shop through if that's your thing. Which, I don't know, is that your thing, Russ?
Not really. I get kind of scared about having something in the house that's always, you know, I was one of those who took the Furby threat really seriously back in the day.
And boy, so, that was a threat.
Well, was it ever?
No, but I do remember that time. I remember people being pretty darn freaked out that Furbies might be like a secret spying thing, you know, with a microphone and all that.
It listens and repeats what you say. Okay, so how do we make that worse? Let's get something that not only listens and can repeat what you say, but does a Google search and is connected to the internet. Yeah, that's how could that possibly go wrong?
And catalogs all that information indefinitely, forever and ever. But if that's your thing, then there you go. There will be an IR infrared capability inside of the media center, the Cube one, the premium one, so it can control all the other devices that you have in your home media setup. So that's kind of nice. Controls on the top, like the Echo Dot, the smaller one, so you can mute it if you like. You just tap the button and you can have it muted, and that kind of takes away some of the freewheeling capability of it, but the potential is there. But there's also going to be a mid-tier, apparently, Fire TV device that will have a, sorry to say this, hanging dongle form factor, kind of like the Chromecast. Kind of plug it into HDMI and back, it hangs down, and basically the only other plug it has is USB for power, and that's going to be like mid-tier if you don't need 4K or UHD. So there you go. Not much more there. A few months after the European Commission issued a $2.7 billion antitrust fine against Google for what it deemed as abuse of its search dominance in online shopping results, Google is now appealing the filing in the lower EU courts. At least for now, Google has not sought to sidestep compliance with the original order that would place penalties on the company if they didn't follow suit. But they're basically, from what it seems anyways, it seems like they're kind of emboldened. And I don't know if this was in the works prior to this or not, but there was, I believe it's an Intel case, a similar Intel case, antitrust case in the EU. That lasted for 8 years, an eight-year-old case And it was just last week ordered to be re-examined by the lower court. And normally, I guess, the EU court and the lower court are kind of in lockstep with how they're determined. This is kind of a break from that. And so it's kind of ends up being a signal to companies like Google who are in similar water to say, hey, if you challenge this, it's very possible that the lower court will overturn it, or you can get another 5 to 6 years of a delay before having to do anything. So there you go. This you thought this was over. It's not. It could extend for another 6 years. Welcome to the movie.
Yeah, it's just I'm really interested to see how this is going to turn out, because it is a landmark, and it does have the potential to be a landmark case. It does have the potential to really change the way these large data companies operate. Mm-hmm. And it is, honestly, I'm kind of on the side of the courts here. You know, it's a little strange. It, you know, the situation with Google, and also, you know, Google tweaking its search to point to its own services. That'd be like if the you know, I was just gonna use an analog analogy, right? It'd be like if the phone company back in the day also sold real estate, and when you got your phone book, right, their ad for their real estate company was on the front page of the R section. I mean, that's basically what Google is doing. It's like no matter what you search for, their stuff is going to show up sooner. And their search algorithm is kind of a black box anyway. I know a lot of people who make a lot of money trying to guess, you know, what buttons to push to get their stuff SEO'd, right, to get it ahead of everybody else's stuff. So if it's a black box and they're also kind of tinkering on it, you know, to their own benefit behind the scenes, that's kind of not cool.
Yeah. I've kind of gone back and forth on this over the years, because for the longest time I was like, yeah, but it's Google's service. Like, I guess I'm okay with the fact that Google, you know, I mean, of course they are. They make all these things. So, of course, through their product, they're going to show you their other products that they do. But, I mean, the world that we live in now, where Google is not the only search engine, but if you're in Google's world, I mean, it can encompass everything. It covers everything, and it goes so deep. So it really has the potential to to fall afoul to these charges. I mean, in this case, EU is charging that Google was giving its own search placement of its shopping product up at the top of search results. And, you know, and that basically also ended up demoting rival products in the process. And I guess that's the question here. Is it okay? The EU has already said that's not, and the risk here is that has a ripple effect to other markets, including the US, and that's absolutely what Google does not want. So the longer they can delay this and extend it out the way Intel has, the better potentially long term. Burke says Google should just pull out of the EU. What then?
Googles it.
Yeah, that's not a good plan. Don't do that. Although Burke is shaking his head. Burke thinks Google should pull out of the EU, but I don't think you do that if you're Google. You're a worldwide company. That's kind of suicide to a certain degree, right?
For Google? Yeah, I think that's a worst case for Google. You know, I feel like the court is going to come back and uphold the decision, and it's going to be a lot like, you know, the Bell Telephone AT&T thing back in the 80s, where, you know, you can either be the search monopoly, or you can sell all these other services and products, but you can't really do both, right?
Yeah, right.
So I can imagine a world in which Google has to split off a bunch of its services.
In a world.
In a world.
Edge-to-edge bezel-less design is all the rage these days, and of course we're probably going to see it on the iPhone 10 or X or whatever it's going to be. Go back to mid-2016, and there was really only one phone at that time that did this, and that was the Xiaomi Mi Mix. It was definitely the first of the new version, a new kind of world order of phones that started to do this bezel-less design. Now we have the sequel, the Mi Mix 2, and it's actually got a little bit smaller of a display, 5.99-inch display, down from 6.44-inch, ceramic back, rounded aluminum frame, has a front-facing camera in the chin of the phone, which is similar to last year's model. So that's one thing to get used to. And I wonder, well, I guess on the iPhone, they have the little cutout in the display, so you don't have to do the turn your phone upside down in order to take a selfie, otherwise you're shooting up your nostrils thing. That keeps the front-facing camera up at the top. Instead of in this phone, that camera's down on the bottom. So if you want to take a selfie, You better rotate that bottom side up in order to do it properly because it's right down there. But it's a nice looking phone, and Xiaomi produces, you know, nice hardware for really great price. I mean, in this case, it's actually a little bit more comparable to prices that we're used to seeing. The 64 gig models around $500. You can get a full ceramic unibody version of this for $720. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's really interesting to see them coming up with a competitive product. I feel like they're exploiting the breach a little bit that Samsung yielded with the exploding Galaxy Notes. It seems like Samsung is doing a pretty good job of recovering from that. But you know, that kind of a mishap, you know, when you get on a plane. And even if you're considering buying a Samsung and you hear the pilot of the airplane say, you know, hey, don't use this phone because it could explode and kill everyone on the plane. Like that's a lot of bad press. So yeah. It definitely creates an opening where if you're Xiaomi, you've got the opportunity to come in with this nice machine. I haven't used one. I haven't held one. They look pretty slick. But as we've already established, I'm kind of a Apple robot, so I'm on the outside looking in on this one.
Yeah, I cover a lot of Android devices. Xiaomi produces really interesting hardware, but I mean, it's next to impossible. It's not impossible. You can't get it through normal avenues here in the States. You have to import it. You know, Xiaomi just doesn't sell in the States. They don't right now. Maybe they will someday, but they don't. So if you really wanted to get this, you'd have to go through some effort. And thankfully, if you did want to do that, it has LTE support for all U.S. bands. So if you were to import it, you could operate it on the LTE networks here in the States. It has very nice specs for Android devices. Snapdragon 835, which is kind of the top of the line right now. 6 gigs of RAM, 3,400 milliamp hour battery. USB-C, so only no headphone jack. So you're doing your headphones through the USB-C, which is another one of those nice trends. Those courageous trends. as Tim Cook may have put it one time. This whole ceramic thing. Were you aware of the Essential Phone, Andy Rubin's kind of Essential Phone? I wish I brought it in here, but I don't know if that crossed your path. It's basically Andy Rubin's the creator of Android, and he created a phone called the Essential Phone, released a new product that is essentially ceramic on the back, and it's titanium on the sides. And it's meant to be like, we made it so tough that you don't need a case sort of thing, and it looks really slick and everything like that. So ceramic, apparently, you know, is scratch-proof. I did not experience that. It scratched, and it scratched just through normal wear and tear. So there was that. And then if you saw that video that Kevin was just playing from the Verge write-up, ceramic is definitely not impervious to breaking if it drops. So this whole trend to materials that can kind of shatter if you make one mistake in your ownership, I just don't know how I like that very much. There it is. There's the chip away from the top.
There it is. Yeah, ceramic is definitely not shatterproof. I actually brought home, one of my first trips to Japan, I brought home a ceramic knife that I had not seen in the States. Held its edge really, really well. Just a beautiful cutting tool. But, you know, just a little flick on the very tip of the blade, and that blade shattered. You know, there's pros and cons. I'm not sure I would want to carry a shatter-prone phone, but I have no problem carrying a no headphone jack phone. I just bought 5 of these to put in every room of the house so I can take a call no matter where I am.
That's what you got to do, right?
That's the future. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's the future. That's the unfortunate future. I'm still totally in the plug, you know, the analog headphone world. Give me a headphone port on my phones. I don't want to have to look for a dongle. That's only because I haven't been forced to. I'm sure with the next phone that I get that requires me to, I'll get used to it. But for now, I don't like it. Anyways, lots to look forward to there. But coming up next, what did PewDiePie say this time? Yes, he said something. We'll talk about it. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that is Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of today's episode of Tech News Today. The mortgage experience, if you've gone through it, you already know that it hasn't kept up with the times. It's not always so easy to find all that information. It's dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a house or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button, the way we're used to online. We're used to things fast, and that's what Rocket Mortgage is all about. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds, so you know exactly what to expect. Based on your income, your assets, and your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and then find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Tech News Today. All right, here we go. No doubt if you keep tabs on gaming circles, you've heard about the latest words to blurt out of PewDiePie's mouth during a Let's Play gaming session over the weekend. PewDiePie, for those who don't know, is the most popular YouTuber on the planet with more than 57 million subscribers and 14 billion views. Well, during a live stream where he played PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, PewDiePie targeted a player inside the game in the live stream and casually threw out a racial slur that I can't and won't repeat here because it's a word I simply don't say in any context, let alone a live stream to thousands of people. Now it's causing a ripple effect that includes Campo Santo co-founder Sean Vanneman, I hope I said that right, who said he was filing a DMCA takedown of PewDiePie's game streams of the company's game Firewatch. Basically said, I'm sick of this child. This is a direct quote. I'm sick of this child getting more and more chances to make money off of what we make. He's worse than a closeted racist. He's a propagator of despicable garbage that does real damage to the culture around this industry. I know you have thoughts about this. This is the gaming world, and you are very tuned into the gaming world. How much influence does someone like PewDiePie have over fellow gamers, and how serious is this?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk to PewDiePie's influence, he's massive. He's, you know, the most popular YouTube gaming star. And it's weird to call him a gaming star, too, because he's more of a pop culture thing. But what he does with his videos, almost exclusively, he plays games or games are involved in some way. So he's speaking to that, you know, generation, that younger generation of folks for whom video games are like water, right? Right. They're just part of their environment, so it doesn't even it doesn't even register that gaming is a unique thing for folks in that generation. It's just part of life. So a mega star like PewDiePie, who treats video games as ubiquitously as they do, just naturally flows. And he is so profoundly popular. It's kind of scary. It would be kind of scary even if he wasn't frequently involved in this kind of controversy. He has such a large following. He has, by himself, almost single-handedly shaped the ecosystem of YouTube and streamers and Let's Players. He created this sort of mega stardom where companies and advertisers are seeking him out and basically competing with each other to get him to wear something on his show or to get a shout out on his show or to get him to play one of his games on his Let's Plays. It's really extraordinary. I first became aware of PewDiePie maybe 6 years ago, and he was already big in some circles, but he had not really achieved that sort of mainstream breakout awareness where people like me, who are who are definitely older than 20, were kind of aware of this phenomenon and how much a part of it he was. But you'd be hard pressed to meet anyone under the age of 20 or even 25 who doesn't know PewDiePie or doesn't watch PewDiePie. He is just that, he's the Beatles of Let's Players. I mean, I get in trouble saying things that hyperbolic like that, but I don't think that's an exaggeration in this case. He is that generation's Beatles.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you consider just the sheer number of subscribers that he has on YouTube, being the most subscribed to person means that his audience is enormous and as far as I've seen, as far as I know, and some of the kids that I've talked to, his audience includes kids. And that's been one question that I've had about this world that we live in where YouTube live streaming is such an important part of a lot of people's lives. Like, it is the replacement for TV for a lot of people, I guess is what I'm saying, and kids included,
yeah.
Where you can have someone... someone who is in PewDiePie's position, whether he's racist or not, right? Like, that's kind of not the question, because I don't know that for sure. But when you're in a position that PewDiePie is in, where you have that kind of reach, I feel like that holds him to a higher standard. Would you agree? Like, that takes you out of this realm of, like, some of the feedback that I've seen people supporting PewDiePie in this is, well, yeah, I mean, I play games all the time and we say some crazy stuff while we're streaming. You just say things, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, and that may be the case. And I totally, you know, like, I've played games and said some, you know, crazy stuff to my friend or whatever. I definitely never said that. And I right. think when you're streaming to thousands upon thousands of people, you definitely don't say that unless there's something else going on there. So should he be held to a higher standard? What do you think?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? And I've been seeing a lot of this on Twitter over the last day or so, that you don't – something like that doesn't come out by accident unless it occasionally comes out on purpose, right? Like, that doesn't, you know, sneak out of your mouth unless it's already in there and a part of your natural repertoire. But in a sense, it doesn't even matter if PewDiePie is racist.
Right.
The fact is, he has this platform. He's taking the money, right? Like, I think – when you achieve that level of fame and success, you do have a moral obligation to your audience and to your followers to set a good example. And, you know, obviously that's subjective. Maybe the way he behaves is what he considers a good example. Okay, then, you know, there's not much you can argue against that. That's fine. But I think you also have a fiduciary and a professional obligation to your sponsors and to your content partners. You know, PewDiePie is making content that he doesn't really have to pay for. You know, these games are sent to him. Even if he does buy the game, he's creating hours and hours of entertainment for people, and he's not paying licensing fees. He's not, you know, paying a fee to the people who created this game to create content based off of it. He's operating like most people on YouTube do, under a broad definition of the fair use law, which in actuality doesn't cover Let's Plays. The laws, the most legal experts tend to agree that the law here is definitely on the side of folks like Camposanto, who don't have to permit this use of their property and can pull the plug at any moment, right? So if you're Pewds, as we call him in the biz, if you're Pewds and you're making millions of dollars off this content, right, you have to at some point kind of acknowledge the power that these people who are giving you those dollars have over you, or else stop taking the money. But, you know, it's pretty clear Camposanto, for one, doesn't want their product to be associated with someone who says the thing PewDiePie says. And I, you know, Disney voted the same way not too terribly long ago.
Yep.
I have a hard time believing that knowing the people I do in the industry, knowing the people who agree with Sean and the people, you know, that I've spoken to personally about this and about other issues relating to this type of thing, I expect many other studios will follow, and that this, you know, if it's not the beginning of the end for PewDiePie, which, let's face it, he's so big. It's not. He's so big. His audience has proved resilient against this kind of controversy, whether they care or not. They just don't. It doesn't seem to influence their love for him, which is fine for them. But I think this will definitely have a major impact on the way business is done on YouTube, and the way these types of Let's Plays are propagated. I expect it is the beginning of the end of the Let's Play star. Whatever happens next, whatever the new environment is for people to create content about video games, I think we're into a new paradigm at this point.
You're the right person to bring on for that story, for sure. That was fantastic. We got another gaming story here. The NES Classic was impossible to buy due to low production and high demand. The SNES Classic has as much, if not more, demand, and Nintendo of America president Reggie Fils-Aim is reassuring the public that the company has dramatically increased, they say, production of the unit ahead of its release. Although that comes after plenty of pre-order issues. I mean, if you're trying to pre-order this, it was one thing after another. Walmart had a bunch of cancellations of pre-orders. They said that was a technical glitch. Pre-orders on August 22nd were basically out of stock in minutes. So are you buying this? Do you think the SNES Classic is going to be any easier to get by the end of the year, or is it going to be as much of a prize if you do get it?
I don't. I honestly don't know. I didn't buy the NES Classic, and I actually didn't have an SNES. I skipped that generation of consoles, so I didn't. Goodness. I don't have the nostalgia there. Yeah, I went from NES to PC and stayed there for a good long while. So I don't have that connection to that console. So I'm not necessarily interested in getting it, but I am paying attention to what happens here. So I feel like. What's interesting to me is the confession about the production of the NES Classic, the previous version, and how they underestimated demand because they were estimating demand for that mini console based on other similar products released by other companies, which I don't know if you've ever seen those other types of, you know, console in a boxes. They're usually terrible.
Yeah, they're
horrible. So, I mean, I know Nintendo in general is a conservative company, but to lowball the demand so steeply based on, you know, such pitiful offerings, I don't know. I can't necessarily say that was a smart move there, but I do believe them when they say they've learned the lesson. I do believe them when they say that they're increasing production. I'm not sure it will matter because people tend to hoard these devices, buy them in lots, and then sell them on eBay. In fact, it's actually a running joke in the industry now that basically any Nintendo device or Amiibo or anything Nintendo makes that is popular in any way, which is most things they make, you have to buy on eBay for 20 or 30% markup because the scalpers tend to get there first. So I don't know. I mean, it would be nice if Super NES mini classics were falling down the chimney right and left this holiday season, but I don't know. I wouldn't expect it.
So then I'm thinking if you were not of the SNES era and then you went straight to PC at that point, you would hold out for a Sierra Online console. Is that
right?
Oh,
yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You'd be like, you're absolutely King's right. Quest 1 through whatever. You'd be like, I'm in.
Yep.
I'd be in too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I'd get all that.
Not that you can't play those games today. I'm sure there are pretty easy ways to play those games still. But, hey, make it easy. I'd totally buy that. TNT's fan of the day is Hamish McEwen, who sent us this picture from the live stream. If I remember correctly, Leo is just done with This Week in Google. Setup has begun for the TNT set. And this right here is what it looks like when Leo Laporte takes a picture of you. This is what you have to look forward to when Leo takes a picture of you. Thank you for sending that in. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. Now, finally, Russ, thought we'd take a few minutes and talk about something that I'm sure you hold dear to your heart, and that's the work of your nonprofit, Take This. Tell us a little bit about the idea behind Take This and how it's helping to address mental health issues and depression in game development.
Yeah. So, you know, Take This, and I've been on the show a few times talking about Take This, but we founded the org in 2012 because we were, frankly, we were losing friends to depression and suicide, and we wanted to know what we could do. You know, how do you reach people who are dealing with issues that are so complex and they don't feel like they can talk to anybody about them? So we started to Take This to just sort of propagate this idea that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to talk to people about mental health issues, that try to erase that stigma that keeps people from getting the help that they need. And since then, you know, in the 5 years we've been doing this, we've raised a ton of money. We've published stories and information at takethis.org. We've helped a lot of people. We've done panels. We do rooms at conventions where people, if they're overwhelmed, they can come and they can talk to somebody about mental health issues in general, or just take a break from the bustle of a busy show like the PAX show I was just at, for example. And as we've been doing that, what we've found is that people come to us and they get so much benefit from the things that we do offer, so the consumer level things we offer. And then they'll come and say, hey, if you can do this for a game convention, maybe you can come to our video game studio, or maybe you can come to our, you know, our technology company and talk to us about mental health and how the workplace can exacerbate mental health issues, or can mask mental health issues, or how, you know, you can, there's things you can do to make a workplace healthier for people who deal with mental health issues and more welcoming. So we did. We launched the Underground program, which you were just showing there on the screen. It's a program where we actually do. We go into companies and we give lectures, we give talks, we do training on mental health awareness. We train managers, HR managers on how, you know, just simple techniques that they can use to manage employees who are dealing with mental health issues, make the workplace a little bit less stressful for folks. You know, we call one of the things I call out, and I've talked at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco a number of years in a row about this. You know, when you get into cold and flu season, like we're getting into now, you'll send somebody to the store and they'll buy a bunch of, you know, Purell and a bunch of emergency and, you know, stock the fridge with juices and stuff to try and take care of people to boost their immune systems. But, you know, you get into a busy, like a crunch period where you're releasing a new product or you're releasing a game. And, you know, there's self-care that you can do and promote for people's mental health as well. But we don't address those issues and we don't talk about them as much here in the United States. So that's what we do. We show up and we give people the tools that they can use to sort of very easily make their workplaces mentally healthier.
Is there a strong correlation between game development environments and employees suffering from these kinds of things? Or do you think it's, I mean, obviously depression is a much wider thing, but why the strong correlation with gaming specifically?
Well, it's like I say to my friends in game development, and it's like the Jurassic Park problem, right? Where they have all the problems of a zoo and an amusement park. And video game development, you have all the problems of a technology company and an entertainment company combined, right? They're often inventing their technology there on the spot every time they make a new game. And they have to serve an audience, and they have all the demands of the publisher that they're working for. If they're self-published, they have demands of the audience. People who work in the video game industry frequently move. They frequently will work at a studio for the life cycle of one game and then, get laid off or, you know, move to another studio just because. There's all kinds of time pressures. The goalposts move frequently. People will often be working on a game for so long that the technology they're using to make that game becomes outdated while they're making it, so they have to go back to the drawing board. That is super common, actually. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, and you sit in the room and they keep the studios dark so that you can see the screens better. And a lot of people, you know, who are computer programmers just prefer the dark. They'll push themselves hard to work extra hours, so they're sitting at a desk for long hours. A lot of times they'll have like a full kitchen in the studio so that you can have your folks stay there, because obviously the longer they're focused on a task, the conventional wisdom anyway is that the longer they're focused on a task, the faster the solutions will come. But the opposite is actually true. You know, the more breaks you take and the more rested you are, the more frequently you can get up and walk around, actually the more efficient you are, and the data holds that up. We actually have data that shows that people who are mentally healthy and happy are 12% better workers, right? So if I could go to any company and say, hey, I have an off-the-shelf solution for you that's going to make your product 12% faster or bigger or better, nobody's going to say no to that. And that's basically what we're saying here. It's like there are ways, you know, there's simple changes you can make to how you run your studio, how you address people with mental health issues, and just how you sort of deal with those issues that can make your people up to 12% more efficient just by making them happier. So I don't know anybody who, once they, you know, sort of understand the scope of the problem and how quickly and easily they can change it, says no to this. The challenge is convincing people that there's an issue at all, and one that they should solve, right? So it's very hard, particularly with the stigma about mental health issues. It's very hard to have that conversation with people, and it's very hard to convince them that this is a problem that, you know, their studio is contributing to. But we found that, you know, once we get to that point with folks, that's you know, then it's super easy to make the changes that'll make everybody's lives better.
Fantastic. Really great work that you guys are doing, and I'm so happy you get the chance to raise awareness a little bit more about this. Where can people find out more? Maybe, you know, maybe we've got people listening that want to kind of run this by the powers that be or whatever and get you guys involved.
Sure. Yeah. Takethis.org/underground. That has all the information and the general pitch for the underground program. The program itself was designed, co-developed by an HR person who works in HR crisis resolution at NASA, as well as a number of management experts in the video game space. So definitely people who understand the pressures and how to speak to very intelligent technology type people. So check it out.
Fantastic. Russ, I'm so happy that we got to bring you on once again. Russ Pitts, it's been too long. So thanks for hopping on with me today and talking a little technology and gaming and all the fun stuff and some of the not so fun stuff as well. Really appreciate it. It's awesome having you back.
Yeah, of course. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. TakeThis.org/underground to find more about Take This. And Russ, we will talk to you soon. Thanks again, man.
Thank you.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. If you want to find me directly on Twitter, not the show, but just me, you can do that as well. I'm there at Jason Howell. By the way, Russ is there as well, at Russ Pitts. And thanks to Kevin, our technical director today, I think our editor. Okay, only editor here today, so that would be a yes. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio, and thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Time for awkward high five. You high five me.
Huge high five.